CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
Welcome to the Meta World Stukaluk Show. I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott. Today on the Meta World Stukaluk Show, we bring you the third and final part of our series on Skylab. Although the media environment was much less prolific in the early to mid-1970s, it was just as capable of over-concentration, so the amount of content, especially informational, that was generated on the subject of the Skylab was considerably more than anticipated. Furthermore, despite it being decades before internet became readily and universally available, the volume of related content that managed to find its way onto the internet is considerable. The thermal parasol sounds far less badass than it actually is, or maybe that was just to throw off the alien surveillance agents. Either way, they must have busted a gut when they saw just what it was we shot forth into the endless bounds of space. Their bosses were fired for sending them. They were expecting a come-upper, a species breakout, but instead got a handily refurbed gas tank manned by a few unassuming white dudes. Bummer. The way technical jargon is introduced at the time is, well, rather serious. Always ending on a tone so much lower than that of the spoken sentence as to seem both contrived, like Captain Kirk, and maybe a touch condescending a la Dr. Spock. It could be called people-splaining. On the Meta World Stupaloop Show on CKUW 95.9 FM, I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott. This week on the Meta World Stupaloop Show, Skylab,
we've seen
Part 3.
Television to let us think a lot about this. You're cleared to turn off the TV and complete any photography you haven't gotten, and you're cleared for soft dock.
Hey, Dick, are you there?
Hey, firm, Paul, go ahead.
I can't understand you, but there's that little piece. It looks like a row of bolts that's wrapped up over the edge of the beep fairing.
Roger, we see that, Paul, and if you did not copy my last...
Skylab Control, you're still up for 16 hours and 36 minutes of Greenwich Mean Time, and now required
to turn off the TV.
Now
and complete your photography if necessary, and you're cleared for soft dock.
Well, the little door is open. It's a little hinge door.
CDR Houston, do you read?
Upward and the other tunnel, too. Hey, there's another tunnel. That's clean.
CDR Houston, do you read?
Skylab Control, Houston, 5 hours, 16 minutes, ground elapsed time. Flight Director Phil Schaffer taking a status check now for the NCC maneuver.
If we don't get it off there, we ain't going to get it up, right?
A row of bolts.
Skylab Houston, we've looked at the bird. You're
Skylab Houston, info, no response required. We've got a gyro drift squared away in the X and Y axes. And we're turning off the third gyros on both of those axes. Our configuration will be X1, X2, and Y1, Y3.
Skylab, we've still got about a minute and a half left in this pass. We're going to have about a 3-minute break.
And your panel configuration is
open. Through an Arai aircraft.
Skylab Houston, do you read? What solved it?
There never was a problem, Joe. The problem, we were out of the solar inertial, so we never could get any good drift rate information on the gyros. Now that we've been in the solar inertial, we've really got the drift nailed down and got them corrected, compensated.
There's John Lynn's experiment hanging on the side.
CDR Houston, do you read?
How much fuel we use?
Workshop.
Skylab Houston, if you read, we are seeing the TV, and how do you copy?
Strong signal, yeah. Houston, you still with us?
Skylab Houston, affirmative, how do you read? Skylab Houston, how do you read?
Top end of that thing.
Skylab Control, Houston, at 5 hours, 18 minutes, ground elapsed time. We've had a loss of signal with Skylab.
I'm going to start it for the front end of the vehicle.
We now show an orbit of 219.1 nautical miles by 200 nautical miles. The two maneuver pads being passed up, NCC, the time of ignition. 27 minutes, 26 seconds. Delta V, 39.8 feet per second. Burn
Skylab
time.
Houston.
2 seconds. The NSR pad. Time of ignition is 6 hours of 4 minutes, 26 seconds.
To rip off shortly after launch and almost wrecked the mission. The Board of Inquiry reported that the shield was designed wrong with holes in it. Air rushed into those holes and tore the shield away.
And then on Saturday, the second Skylab mission is scheduled to be launched from Cape Kennedy. The mission is expected to be man's longest in space so far, 59 days. The second crew of Skylab astronauts is scheduled to descend into space from Cape Kennedy tomorrow for a 59-day stay in their orbiting laboratory. If they accomplish the mission, their stay will be the longest period man has been up in space. And NBC News will cover the launch beginning at 6:45 a.m. Eastern time.
The next station to acquire will be Hawaii in approximately 14 and a half minutes.
Adventure, and there was just simply the demonstration of managerial and organizational and industrial economic competence in a world that was contested. So that was Skylab.
Throughout the 1960s, they looked at a number of different ways in which you could take the Apollo materials, particularly Saturn V and the Apollo spacecraft, and do space station-like things with them. So we get ready to launch Skylab. The Skylab Saturn V is sitting on one launch pad, but the two launch pads we have for the Apollo program. Skylab is sitting on one launch pad, just a little ways away on the other launch pad is this Saturn I vehicle with the command and service module, because Skylab launches one day, and the vehicle with the first crew was supposed to launch the next day. Skylab, the laboratory, goes up, the micrometeoroid shield that was on it that also provided heat protection for the vehicle rolls back, jams into the solar arrays, that they're two big 5 kilowatt each solar arrays that we're supposed to deploy. Skylab gets in orbit, it's crippled, and we're in big trouble because Skylab needs that energy from those big solar arrays to operate for the mission to be successful.
We've all been working, at least the three of us, for something like...
The second threesome of Skylab astronauts is scheduled to be launched from Cape Kennedy tomorrow morning for a record 59-day stay in space. ABC's Jules Bergman is at the Cape and has a report on the men and their mission.
We're all very anxious, very pleased to be back at the Cape, and we're anxious to start off on this trip for which we've all been working, at least the three of us, for something like, two or three years as a team and 5 or 6 years total, and we're really anxious to get started with it, and we hope to be seeing you folks when we're back here on the ground in a little over 2 months.
Skylab 3 and the three astronauts in good shape are psyched up over the longest manned space flight ever attempted, but it's pretty hard to find anyone else really excited about the mission.
5:45 a.m. and Central Time, and 6:15 a.m. on the Pacific Coast. Jim Hartz has the report.
Heavy rain showers drenched the Kennedy Space Center late this afternoon, but clear weather is forecast for the launch of the second manned Skylab mission at 7:11 tomorrow morning Eastern Daylight Time. The three-man crew, Alan Bean, Owen Garriott, and Jack Lausner, spent today lounging on a nearby beach. Skylab program officials say they are eager and willing for the start of their 59-day trip in a space station 270 miles above the Earth. They will be in space more than twice as long as the first Skylab crew, but medical experts see no danger to the men. Going into orbit with the three astronauts will be a number of mice, spiders, and fish, which will be exposed to weightlessness to see how they behave. The countdown has been going on without a serious hitch, and scientists are hoping to get back another wealth of information about man's reaction to long-term space flight. Jim Hart, NBC News, Cape Kennedy.
The weather not so good now, but the forecast looks good for tomorrow morning. The longest ride in the history of mankind, over 20 million miles, will begin aboard this rocket early tomorrow. The timing of the launch, a crapshooter's dream, 7:11, the rocket heading skyward at 7:11 a.m. Eastern Time.
Space officials have set November 9th as the tentative launch date for the third manned Skylab mission. That's 6 weeks after the astronauts on the current mission are scheduled to return.
The space agency announced today that the next three Skylab astronauts will be launched on November 10th as scheduled, and that they may stay up for as long as 85 days. The agency said rocket fuel tanks that buckled have now been repaired.
NASA announced today that the Skylab 3 launch will go ahead as scheduled on November 10th. It found no structural damage to rocket fuel tanks that had caved in Tuesday.
And in 10 days, they quickly come up with a plan. People sew together a parasol sunshade that they could erect outside the station. They came up with some equipment that the crews could use to try and unstick the giant solar array that was stuck. And Pete Conrad and his crew, the first Skylab crew, go launch 10 days later and save the entire program.
This morning to make the Skylab habitable and operational. Early this afternoon, medical experiments.
This special aeronautics and space report brought to you by NASA.
Calibrated for use, the lower body negative pressure device.
To a casual observer, it appeared to be another perfect launch. 63 seconds after liftoff, however, an apparent mechanical failure caused a micrometeoroid and thermal shield to be torn away.
That very ingenious. It was a NASA-wide effort, and indeed NASA and an industry-wide effort. There were suggestions and solutions were proposed by people all over. And it was very gratifying to watch the aerospace industry and NASA come to grips with this problem and come up with a solution.
Astronaut Rusty Schweikert is just one of the hundreds of people who helped solve the problem. Schweikert spent many, many hours underwater simulating techniques for fixing the solar panel.
In the underwater simulation, we then wanted to demonstrate three different capabilities. We wanted to show that we could pry the strap off using a cinch bar or a pinch bar that we had on board the spacecraft already. And we demonstrated that capability. The next thing we demonstrated was the capability to cut through the strap using a very small device that's stowed in the onboard dental kit called a bone saw. And this bone saw fits very nicely on the thumbs of the glove, and you slip it underneath the aluminum strap and then just cut through it with a back and forth motion. So we demonstrated that, and then finally we demonstrated that just by tightening up further on the cutters, the large cutters that we had at the end of the 25-foot pole, that we could also cut through the strap using those cutters.
At Cape Kennedy today, the Skylab space station and its Saturn V rocket were moved to an outside launching pad. The 3.5-mile trip took 6 hours. Launch date is the 14th of May. Extremely light trading and falling prices today on the stock.
NBC News, Grimes, Iowa.
The scheduled launch of the Skylab Space Laboratory on May the 14th could be delayed by a strike. Union men operating a ground tracking station at Cape Kennedy went on strike last night. Today they picketed the entrances to the Cape Kennedy spaceport. All other work toward the launch continued, but space officials say the tracking station is vital to the project. Skylab astronauts Charles Conrad, Paul Weitz, and Joe Kerwin today climbed aboard their spaceship and rehearsed their countdown. The test, the rocket success, and spacecraft and paved the next Skylab for the mission. We're given a launch test today at Cape Canaveral. It was successful, and everything is moving forward for a blastoff 1 week from tomorrow.
The Skylab 3 launch, scheduled for Saturday, was postponed today until next Thursday at the earliest. The space agency said tiny cracks were discovered last night in several of the stabilizing fins on the first stage of the Saturn rocket. The fins must be replaced before launch.
$2.5 billion program would have gone down the drain if the crew hadn't gone up there and saved the mission.
Okay, we're free. We got 1/10 of a foot per second, Houston. Roger. Bye-bye, Skylab.
The story of the launch of the Skylab Orbital Workshop is one of those great triumphs of things going bad and engineers and humans and astronauts working together to fix them.
They have a very successful, almost month-long mission. And prove that, in fact, first, that Skylab will work, that humans are really important to those things, and they get a lot of good scientific data. And, of course, we had two more crews that launched later in the year. The second Skylab crew goes up for a longer period and does lots of Earth science experiments, lots of solar observations.
Skylab 3 launch scheduled for Saturday today had to be postponed at least until next Thursday after tiny cracks were discovered in the fins of the Saturn launch rocket. NASA officials said the hairline cracks were the result of age, stress loads, and corrosion in the 7-year-old rocket. The
defective fins will be replaced. NASA said that the cracked fins could cause the rocket to break up on launch. More cracks have been found in the Skylab's Saturn rocket, and the launch of its three astronauts again has been postponed.
Later in the day, the crew will link up with the orbiting Skylab space station, hang out a no vacancy sign, and remain there for 59 days, more than twice as long as the first Skylab crew, the most severe test yet of man's durability in space. The three-man crew arrived down here yesterday afternoon.
The pieces came. They're all part of the United States' next manned space mission, Skylab.
Navy pilot who has been in space before, the other crewmen have not, being walked on the moon, flight of Apollo 12. Jack Lausma is the Marine.
Will be operating in Earth orbit for about 8 months. It will serve as working and living quarters for three sets of astronaut crews for flights from 28 to 56 days. These are the three men who will open the space station and stay there 28 days. Astronauts Paul Weitz, Dr. Joseph Kerwin, and Charles Pete Conrad. Astronaut Conrad will be in command. Born in Philadelphia, he is 42 years old and a veteran of three previous Gemini and Apollo space flights. Conrad described the sequence of events, including a dual launch.
We're going to use both launch pads at Cape Kennedy, pad 39A and pad 39B. And on 39A, we have the orbital workshop on a Saturn V, and it will be launched into orbit, unmanned. When it gets into orbit, the ground will be able to deploy the solar panels and the shroud around the front of it, get rid of that,
Skylab
and deploy the solar telescope off to the side and perform a bunch of functions by ground command, which will prepare it for our joining it the next day. Now, we will launch approximately 23 and a half hours later after it does, and after five revolutions of the Earth, we will have stepped up and rendezvous with it. And at that time, we're going to dock. We performed just a few checks on the exterior part of the vehicle and that our docking is a good docking. And we will pretty well have spent the whole day at the task of rendezvousing. So we will go to bed in the command module. And then very early the next morning, we will start activation of the workshop. Now, our task in activating the workshop will be longer and considerably different than the crews that will follow us up there, because much of the equipment will be in what we call the launch configuration. It has to be bolted to the floors or firmly to the walls to take the vibrations of launch into space. So we will go in, and the first day we will spend reconfiguring all this equipment to its proper location for use when it's in orbit.
The orbital workshop is about the size of a small house. Pete Conrad continues.
Well, in this vehicle, we have, of course, quite a few items we've never had before. We have a freezer system so that we have frozen food, which we've never had before. We have three separate bedrooms with doors. You can go to bed, close your door at night. We have a full bathroom on board, and we intend to shave every day and so forth, and we have a shower on board. Won't be able to use that every day, the way the water works out. Everybody gets one shower a week, so we'll be back to the Saturday night shower. And, of course, all of these items that I've just mentioned are things that we've never had in spaceflight before. So
Houston, if you're
I think
we
we're going to be a lot
TV
more comfortable, and I look forward to giving most of them a try.
To prepare themselves for the spacewalk they'll be taking, astronauts Conrad and Kerwin practiced underwater at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama.
Roger, Paul, copy.
As we get to the end of the 28 days, about 3 days before the end of the flight, we're going to have to put on our pressure suits to it and go outside to the solar telescope and collect all the film out of the different instruments that have taken the pictures, and bring that back in, and also load some film in the cameras for some of the other crews that are coming up. And then, at that point in time, after having done our EVA and collected the film out of the solar telescope, we will spend the next 2 days preparing the V vehicle for deactivation and our departure.
41-year-old Dr. Joseph P. Kerwin, designated Skylab science pilot, has a Doctor of Medicine degree from Northwestern University. Born in Oak Park, Illinois, Kerwin is the first MD to go into space.
Obviously, the most important immediate thing we need to know is, can man live and work effectively and normally in space for a long period of time?
3 through 5 launches at the end of 1973.
-2/10 at Y and 0 at Z. It be advised, it does leave a large residual. It was again about 1.6 foot plus that we had to take out.
Roger, copy, Pete. Thank you.
And our first cut through the P-34 recycle shows very good agreement with the ground solutions NSR.
Roger, copy.
And be advised, we did go with the onboard, which was a little different from the ground. Let me read you down 81 for in CC. It's plus 0375, plus 0060, minus 132.
Roger, Pete, copy.
And be advised that we have a
big scale. We're about 1 minute from LOS.
Which
and
we will
we're
going to
see at Goldstone at 7:57.
20.9. Of course, they don't know the out of plane yet. And minus 14.7.
Give me a spot. Roger, copy.
Deckers awake.
Roger, we're looking at it, Paul.
I have anything wrapped around it.
Right now, they're up for almost 3 months, and they observe, do solar observations, do more Earth observations. We do experiments with students. The first NASA student experiments go on during Skylab. The last crew leaves Skylab in early 1973, so a very successful program overall, despite the fact that it almost, on the first minute of operations, almost went in the drink.
NCC burn.
No, I've been looking at it.
We presently show an orbit for Skylab of 224.8 nautical miles by 216.8 nautical miles.
We're very close to LOS now, and you can go ahead with your photography. Skylab Houston,
Yeah, I can see the butterfly engine under there.
Roger.
That piece wrapped around the top on this side.
Okay. Let's go around.
Yeah, I gotta get some photos. So.
By Honeysuckle.
This is Skylab Control. 7 hours, 53 minutes, ground elapsed time. That's Skylab 2, ground elapsed time. Here in Mission Control Center, member
members of Skylab management and the flight control team are going over drawings and documentary photographs of the solar wing to try to speculate as to what the potential damage might be to the solar wing based upon the crew's initial assessment of the damage reported during the recent pass over the Guam Island tracking station. The crew described the situation as that it appeared portions of the micrometeorite shield had slid back underneath the one of the solar wings, but that the butterfly hinge on which the main beam swings out is apparently intact. They could see the actual hinge. They also reported being able to see the TACS, or thruster attitude control system, bursts of gas being emitted, coal gas, nitrogen. When the thruster attitude control system aboard the space station would fire to maintain space station attitude. During the upcoming stateside pass, we'll have a resumption of television from the command service module as they do a fly around and further damage assessments and descriptions.
Go Houston, 5 minutes, 5 hours, 51
midway
minutes.
Through the status
check emission
stateside pass.
Go, no go for NSR.
Skylab the Houston, crew of Skylab 2 will be given a go, no go for soft docking. We just heard a warbling sound that is the alarm that we're 2 minutes away from acquisition.
That burn scheduled to occur at 6 hours,
first
4 minutes.
Time this alarm has been used in a mission.
Seconds.
Other than simulations for Skylab.
Time, we're at 5 hours, 52 minutes now.
Earlier in the Skylab simulations, a darkroom timer, which sounded much like an alarm clock, was used. But now we've gone to a warbling alarm that goes off at 2 minutes prior to acquisition at each station, primarily to alert the flight controllers that they should settle down and be thinking about the upcoming station pass. We'll leave the air ground circuit up live. We're less than a minute away from acquisition at Goldstone. And we'll await the resumption of television and description by Commander Pete Conrad's crew of the situation on Skylab space station as they fly around. Apparently we have had AOS at Goldstone.
Skylab Houston, we got JOS at Goldstone.
And a doctorate, electrical engineering, taught at Stanford until he was picked as an astronaut, still carry America's first mustache into space. Today, the wives of two of the astronauts visited their husband's place of work. That's Mrs. Lausman taking her hat off. Mrs. Bean came along, too, on the brief inspection tour. Both ignored or wiped the urge. They did not rearrange the furniture. CBS News will broadcast the launch tomorrow beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. Morton Dean, CBS News, Kennedy Space.
Second threesome of Skylab astronauts is scheduled to be launched from Cape Kennedy tomorrow morning for a record 59-day stay in space.
The real triumph of Skylab is that it basically took a situation gathering both the limits of what was possible and the possibilities presented by incredible technological development miles, put them together in a program that produced tremendous benefits in science, education, what spaceflight is all about. So it's a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone between the Apollo program and then the later definitions of what spaceflight would mean for the United States.
Skylab is the first step. We learn how to operate in space. We build on that with the ISS.
The three crew members face a 59-day mission, orbiting the world more than 900 times. Navy Captain Alan Bean, who explored the moon on Apollo 12, commands the flight. Dr. Owen Garriott, a physicist, is the scientist on board. And Jack Lausma, a Marine major, is the third man in like Garriott
orbit.
They reach the space station and dock. They'll tackle 62 separate experiments aimed at utilizing space to help the Earth.
We'll keep the line open and continue to monitor.
Copy.
Which way to point this son of a gun from the...
Roger.
Okay, Houston, are we too close or too far for you?
I think you're real good, Pete. We can see that whole wing.
Okay, be advised, we have all four service module quad lights on from overheat. They're reading 200 degrees.
Roger. CDR, we're in Hawaii. How do you read?
Roger, read you loud and clear. The burn was on time. It was plus point one, minus point one, minus point one. EMF read minus 10.9. And I gave, let me read you the NAN 81. It was plus 6.0.
Roger, we're looking at, I assume you're pointing just about in the place where the meteoroid shield is underneath the wings,
and we were able to demonstrate underwater all three techniques so that we had high confidence that the crew would be able to get the job done using one or more of those demonstrated techniques.
And
we all know that the sun is probably the most important body as far as we're concerned, because everything that we have here on Earth in the form of energy, heat, fuel, anything else came from the sun or it comes from the sun at this moment. We want to understand better how it works. There's many, many occurrences, heat transfer phenomena that if we could understand how it occurred on the sun, it would probably help us in our efforts now to harness the atom and make it better and usable for peaceful purposes.
While most of the results of the first Skylab mission are still being processed, astronaut Bean did make these observations.
I think one of the most important things that we've learned as far as crew operations are concerned, and I think this affects then every single thing we do in the space station, is the ease with which man has been able to move about the space station. He's been able to move rapidly. He's been able to fix himself in one position so that he could work experiments, so that he could perform housekeeping functions. He's been able to move large boxes, some weighing several hundred pounds, precisely, without breaking his fingers, without bumping them into the wall, put them just where he wanted them to be. Essentially, we found out that man, in a large volume, can operate very efficiently. Now, going on the theory that space stations and space vehicles will become larger as time progresses, just as the modern aircraft carrier came from the canoe, we're going to find that we're going to continue to occupy larger and larger volumes. And this is an indicator that man is going to be able to live with that idea in mind.
Skylab laboratory on the 14th of May and of the astronauts the next day. They'll join up with it in space. At Cape Kennedy next week, two countdowns will start for the launch of the Skylab mission. The space station is scheduled to be launched on Monday. On Tuesday, the astronauts who will work in Skylab will be sent up to dock with the spacecraft. The men will enter Skylab next Wednesday.
Two countdowns started today at Cape Kennedy. One countdown is for Skylab, the orbiting space station, which will be launched on Monday.
The ABC's Jules Bergman is at the Cape and has a report on the manner of their mission.
The following day.
We're all very anxious, very pleased to be back at the Cape, and we're anxious to start off on this trip for which we've all been working, at least the three of us, for something like, oh, 2 or 3 years as a team and 5 or 6 years total, and we're really anxious to get started with it, and we hope to be seeing you folks when we're back here on the ground in a little over 2 months.
Skylab 3, the three astronauts in good shape, are psyched up over the longest manned space flight ever attempted. But it's pretty hard to find anyone else really excited about the mission. The three crew members face a 59-day mission, orbiting the world more than 900 times. Navy Captain Alan Bean, who explored the moon on Apollo 12, commands the flight. Dr. Owen Garriott, a physicist, is the scientist on board. And Jack Lausma, a Marine major, is the third man and, like Garriott, a rookie. Once they reach the space station and dock, they'll tackle 62 separate experiments aimed at utilizing space to help the Earth. But the medical knowledge on how well men can take a 2-month-long space flight is the single biggest objective. There are fewer doubts this time, but there are still doubts. They plan to double their exercise time to 1 hour a day to fight off the effects of weightlessness. Carrying hundreds of pounds of new items, from extra underwear and seasoning to spice up their food, to film and experiments, it's the heaviest Apollo spacecraft ever launched. The missions get longer, tougher, and more dangerous, yet are somehow accepted as being commonplace by the people. And NASA has yet to prove the ultimate value of space to mankind, which is the real goal of Skylab. This is Jules Bergman, ABC News, reporting at Cape Kennedy.
ABC News will provide live coverage of tomorrow's launch from Cape Kennedy beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern Time.
We're going to see at Goldstone at 6:19.
I think it's a natural question is, why explore space? And some people have, different people have different views on this. Personally, to my way of thinking, a part of human nature is to reach out and explore.
The fact of the matter is, if man stops really stretching himself and extending himself and looking out, then I think that's when civilization will begin to decline. Man just has that inquisitive nature, and it's got to be satisfied.
We're right on the threshold of really a brand new opportunity to explore
the... further beyond low Earth orbit to visit an asteroid and then on to Mars. That's the plan.
Program scheduled to bring you a special Skylab report. ABC News presents Skylab, a workshop in space.
Good morning. The longest space flight in history is drawing to a close. We are only 20 minutes or so away now from the splashdown of the first Skylab astronauts. They've been up there for 28 days, studying the sun, the Earth, and most important, themselves, to determine the effect on man. The big question has been whether man can endure in space for long periods of time and the effect it has on him. So far, this crew appears to be in much better shape than anticipated. The recovery carrier, Ticonderoga, is on station in the Pacific recovery area, some 830 miles from San Diego. The weather downrange is said to be quite acceptable. Well, Jules, all appears ready for another splashdown.
Right, Frank, and so far, man has prevailed. About 15 minutes ago, Conrad Serwin and Wright separated their command module from their service module with a dual burn maneuver, if you will, the service module's reaction control system thrusters pulling away from the command module, a maneuver much like this. Then the three astronauts in the command module, as on many past Apollo flights, did a slight burn of their reaction control system thrusters on the command module, pulled away. The reaction control system thrusters on the service module did another burn to get it away from the command module, and they began the dynamic act of reentry. Not as harrowing and perilous a reentry as we've seen on many past lunar flights. A somewhat slower reentry, but they're headed back in. Shortly, the blackout will begin, and the critical parts of the reentry before they splash down. In past space missions,
Neil Dorser with the CBS World News Roundup. Astronauts were told to sleep late and take most of the day off after yesterday's successful 7-hour spacewalk. But along with praise for the spacewalkers has come criticism for the astronaut who stayed inside and made heavy use of fuel to maneuver the Skylab cabin. Edward Gibson used up about 10% of the Skylab fuel. Why? A question addressed by NASA spokesman Dennis Williams.
Part of it is due to the fact they were doing a spacewalk, and a lot of special forces are brought into effect when you do a spacewalk. Part of it is believed now to have also been due to perhaps a mistaken judgment on the part of the pilot who was operating the space station at the time.
And on Wednesday next week, the astronauts will enter Skylab and spend 4 weeks in it.
Dual countdowns continue today for the rockets, which next week are to launch America's first Skylab space station and its astronauts into Earth orbit. The unmanned Skylab will be launched Monday to be followed on Tuesday by the three-man crew, Charles Pete Conrad, Joseph Kerwin, and Paul White. Then, almost 300 miles above the Earth, the astronauts will link up with the space station and make it their laboratory home for almost a month. How the men will live in that new environment is the subject of this report that we filmed earlier at the Huntsville, Alabama Space Center.
Next week, this unusual craft is going to become man's most ambitious home in space.
Skylab Control, Houston, 6 hours, 21 minutes.
For as long as 8 weeks at a time. Although it looks like some strange contraption from a science fiction movie, it's really a three-bedroom house, complete with a kitchen, a bathroom, a laboratory, an observatory, a factory, and a power station. From this point here, we can get a pretty good idea of how this level of Skylab is arranged. Now, this is the area where some of the medical experiments will be carried out.
We're like the guys that were examining pilots and aircraft back in 1920 and 1921 and trying to arrive at medical standards for aviators and to protect them from the stresses of high altitude, cold exposure, so on and so forth. We're a supporting role. We need to know what happens to man in weightlessness, whether it's dangerous. If it's dangerous, what countermeasures can we apply so that we'll get through those days and perhaps in the future fly very long missions.
This knowledge can also contribute to an understanding of life processes, which are basic to treating human illness. Besides extensive pre-flight and post-flight medical studies on each of the men, the trio will be put through what Dr. Kerwin calls dynamic measurements.
The object of the in-flight measurements is to stress the man, to make him work, to make his body speed up, and then observe how efficiently it does the job. And we have two major experiments like that.
One is a bicycle. It's one of those exercise type things, very carefully calibrated. You set it to a workload which you think will stress the individual because it did back on the ground. And then while he's running, you measure everything you conveniently can about him. You measure his heart rate, his blood pressure, you get an electrocardiogram on him. And most important, you measure in great detail the composition of the gases that he breathes out so that you find out how much oxygen he is using, how much carbon dioxide he's breathing out, and you get from that a rough and ready but very valuable measure of how well this gentleman is able to coordinate his heart, his blood vessels, his muscles, and everything else to do a difficult physical job.
The second major in-flight experiment is the lower body negative pressure device, which puts a different kind of stress on the body. Now what you do is you enter feet first into a garbage can kind of a thing, up to your waist, and you wrap a seal around your waist to make it airtight, and then with a vacuum hose you suck the air out of the garbage can. This causes negative pressure on the lower part of the body, the veins expand, and blood is trapped or pooled in the lower half of the body where it's not effectively used by the circulation. This is our clever way of simulating gravity while we're in weightlessness, because if you stand upright for a long period of time, like soldiers on a parade ground, your blood does tend to pool this way in the lower part of your body, and frequently people faint. This is why people faint in crowds. Now, how a man responds to a carefully measured stress of this kind is a good indication of how well his blood vessels and his heart can adjust.
The people on the ground will be keeping a watchful eye on the crew, sometimes even as they sleep. This sleep monitoring cap, for instance, allows brainwave measurements to be made without wires being fastened to the head. The actual sleeping arrangements are rather unique, as astronaut Kerwin describes.
Sleeping arrangements look different, and we always show them to visitors in the trainer as an example of the fact that you've got to think weightless. You've got to think of the fact that once you're in space, the rooms all get bigger because the walls and the ceiling now become just as useful to you as the floor. And they say, will it be distracting? And I say, I don't know because I haven't been there, but the guys who have say, yes, it's very distracting for a few days, and then you get used to it and you don't really think about it anymore. What our sleeping arrangements are is we have three little cubicles side by side, and in each of these cubicles, which is the standard 6.5 feet tall but very narrow, you have a sleeping bag essentially on an aluminum frame, and the only way to put it was straight up against the wall. I think that once you're in the sleeping bag, and by the way, you have to get in the sleeping bag through a hole in the neck of this blanket. It's a very interesting arrangement. You sort of, you know, Coke bottle yourself in there and you're all snug. Then you have your little reading light on your right, and you have your little speaker box that you can talk to the ground if they call you. You don't have room service. If you want to get a sandwich in the middle of the night, you've got to do that yourself.
Looking at the Earth's resources from space will be a major part of every Skylab mission, a chance to survey everything from crops to schools of fish in the oceans, timberlands to mineral deposits. 40-year-old Paul Weitz, a native of Erie, Pennsylvania, will have the main responsibility for conducting the Earth Resources experiments on board this first Skylab.
It was an expensive spacewalk yesterday in terms of attitude control gas, but on the other hand, we think we have a very good idea of how much we'll need for the remainder of the mission, and we think we can do all the experiments intended within the budget we have available. The ground troops are doing an evaluation now of yesterday's EVA to make sure that the same thing doesn't happen on future spacewalks and extravehicular activities, but we don't think we'll have to do any special arrangements to correct the problem.
Spacewalk lasted a record 7 hours and may have produced the best picture yet of the comet Kohoutek.
Thank you, Bill. The astronauts of Skylab 3 will have a day of relaxation today after spending an eventful Christmas 270 miles above the Earth. Yesterday was capped by a record 7-hour spacewalk by Gerald Carr and William Pogue, whose main mission was to obtain closer photographs of Kohoutek's comet. The two astronauts also repaired a sun study camera and put fresh film in their solar observatory. Inside the orbiting space station, while Carr and Pogue maneuvered outside. They had some trouble getting into position to take pictures of the comet, and whenever they moved, the workshop rolled several degrees out of position. Gibson had to use extra gas to adjust Skylab's altitude, but ground controllers at the Johnson Space Center here in Houston said that the use of extra fuel was not a major problem and would not affect the mission.
American Information Radio. This is Dan Streeter from New York, and at this hour...
Crew, yesterday hour was a very busy one, highlighted by a record 7-hour spacewalk. A major task then was photographing the comet Kohoutek. A minor problem was the use of more gas than expected. Some details on that from Dennis Williams at the Johnson Space Center.
Thank you.
at the cone.
Well, the Earth Resources Experiments Package is a group of five sensors which we're going to use to look at the Earth to gather data. With these five sensors, 15 times during our flight. With that, the data is collected on board on magnetic tape and brought back, and later reduced and analyzed here on Earth. Through it, we hope to a myriad of things that we're going to find out. First off, we're going to find out how does the package perform as a package. In other words, did we pick the right mix of experiments with which to do the job? Now, for example, some of the things are the states of health of foliage of different types, whether they be crops, trees, grasslands, pasture, what have you. Hopefully, can we determine the depth of snow in a given region? Can we determine how fast the snow is melting at the rate of melt runoff, such that downstream stations can be advised of when to open the gates on dams to predict how much water is coming down to help minimize flooding? Can we trace thermal currents in the ocean or the Gulf of Mexico? Can we even spot schools of fish? Can we determine where underground sources of water are located, and many, many other really practical applications?
Some 8 solar telescopes on Skylab will be aimed toward the sun, a vantage point that no one has ever had before. With solar power already being discussed as a possible means of easing our energy crisis, the solar physics studies take on added meaning and importance.
We're going to be able to look at the sun in wavelengths that were impossible to see before because the atmosphere filtered these out. And from this, we'll have a better understanding of the phenomena that are presently going on the sun's surface, how it affects our lives on Earth now, how it's affected our evolution and our history, and perhaps how we can better cope with changes that are coming up in the future.
The astronauts will assess the value of devices that expedite moving from one place to another inside the orbital workshop. Here, astronaut Paul Weitz practices using one such device. It is believed that unique crystal structures can be manufactured in the vacuum of space. Again, astronaut Paul Weitz.
Yes, the primary experiment which we're doing is called the Metals Processing Facility, in which we're going to... It's a sphere which can be sealed off from the interior of the spacecraft and evacuated. That is
5 nautical miles. Meanwhile, the Saturn workshop has an orbit of 248.1 nautical miles by 234 nautical miles.
Over to my left, there is the bedroom area. There's a hole in the ceiling right here that leads on up to the second level. But you notice there aren't any stairs. In space, where there's no gravity, just a slight push on the floor sends you in the direction you want to go. Speaking about the floor, let's take a close-up look at it. It's quite unusual. It's made of lightweight aluminum in the shape of open triangles. And there's a reason for this shape, and right here, it is. In a weightless condition, the astronauts are going to find an orbit. They just float around in here unless there is something to hold them down. So on the sole of their sneakers, they put a triangular metal plate. When the astronaut wants to stand in one place on the floor, he just fits his shoe into an opening in the triangle. There's a little twist, and he's locked in place. Then when he wants to go on and move around, he twists his foot again, and he's free to do so. By the way, since there's really no up or down, where there's no gravity, of course, the ceiling would be the floor, too. The astronaut could lock himself in place right up there on the ceiling, just the same way, just like that. And then he'd just hang there, head down. You might call this the combination dining room, kitchen, and recreation room for the astronauts. Along the walls there are some of the frozen food lockers that will be stocked with, about a ton of food. That should be more than enough for all three of the manned missions. They'll bring their food over to this table here in a tray that they pull out of the wall over there. After they've filled it with some of these canned foods from the food lockers, they bring it over here and it locks into place. Now, they don't have to cook any of the food. It's these trays have built-in heaters. They just turn them on and the food is heated for them. Over here is something the astronauts insisted on having. It's a shower.
Because of the limited supply of water, they can only take a shower once a week, but in space, that's a big luxury. Here's how it works. They stand here and use this hose to cover themselves with water. They only get about 3/4 of a gallon for that weekly shower. And then, because, of course, things are weightless here, water's floating around, they've got to have some way to collect that water. And here it is. It's a vacuum hose. They use that then to get all the water off and around here.